Blog Talk Radio.
It's the V-Spot. I'm your host, Dr. Vic Tater. My co-host is Bill Foster. V-Spot Radio is brought to you by Planet Vic Tater Blog Network. Get everything you need and a few things you truly do not want. Only at Planet Vic Tater. All right, we're on the air. We got a big guest, the biggest guest that we've had so far, Michael Smith, who played DJ Connor on Roseanne. And me and Neil are both really excited for this. It happened just because I try to get people on the show, and I made a cold call, and Michael's a solid dude, and he agreed to do it. How you doing, Michael?
I'm good. I'm excited.
All right, man. I'm trying to start because I figure every interview you get asks how you first got on the show.
We can start there if you'd like.
No, it's fine. I am curious though. How did you get started? Were you already acting before you did Roseanne, or was that like your first audition?
You know, I had just started auditioning. My sister wanted to earn money for college. She's one of those forward thinkers, and at the time I was 5 and she was 7, and she's one of those people who plans her life 20 years out and always has kind of a eye on the future. And I went on a few auditions, and it was 1988, and there was a writer's strike, so there was literally no work. And our parents only wanted us to do commercials, so they did not want us to do anything long-term. And the audition came up for Roseanne, and my parents adamantly did not want me to go. The agent said, well, they want somebody with experience, and your son has done absolutely nothing, so there's no way he'll get it. Would you just go? And 9 years later, it turned into a long-term project that nobody had anticipated.
Yeah, that's usually the way it goes. You know, you basically kind of, you know, I've been trying to figure this out myself, you know, how to jinx life into giving me things.
Yep.
You know,
I always call it like I got struck by lightning.
Do you remember the first time you met Roseanne?
Oh, absolutely. I met her the second audition. There was 6 auditions spanning over 6 months. They saw something like 10,000 kids. The last 3 auditions, there was only 3 kids. It was down to a kid who had done a bunch of stuff from New York and a kid who had done a bunch of stuff from Chicago. And the second audition, we went in and she was inside. And she said, tell me a joke. And I told her a joke. And what I learned later was from that point on, she pushed for me. And I'm kind of one of the first battles she won. So I think, in hindsight, if they had known what they were doing when they gave in to her, I don't know that they would have.
Do you remember what the joke was? Do you?
What was that?
If you remember what the joke was.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And at the time, as far as we knew, I had made it up. My sister and my cousins and I used to make up jokes, and it was, why did the turtle cross the road? And the punchline was chicken's day off. And, you know, for a 5-year-old, that was pretty good. And
yeah.
the funny part was that I guess she had asked all the kids that came in, and they were all professionals, and every kid said to her, oh, I'm not prepared for that. I didn't know I needed a joke. And I was the only one who stepped up and just told a joke, and she said I had good timing.
Do you remember why they did the pilot with the first kid?
You know, I know that they did the pilot. When I came aboard, again, my parents thought that this was for a pilot, and so they were very shocked when I ended up getting the part, and we did everything wrong you could do wrong and still ended up getting it. And we found out that they had shot the pilot with another little boy, and they had already sold the show for 13 episodes. And we never really got into why. You know, it's one of those things, I didn't care why, because at that point, I wasn't the reason that he was removed, and at that point, it was my job, and there was no reason to look back.
Yeah. You know, watching the episodes, you were really natural for a little kid. Knowing you didn't have any experience, you came across, I think you might have been, you came across as a genuine little kid and not a kid actor.
that was the thing that Roseanne really said, that I had good timing and that I was a kid. I wasn't a trained professional. She said, you know, everybody else smelled like acting.
Actually, I know that happens with some child actors. You can actually tell which ones actually seem like an actual child, not just a child actor. Like, even with Dustin Diamond, you can kind of see, it's like, yeah, there's someone playing that part. With you or, like, I forgot his name, from, like, the Wonder Years, Fred Savage, you would think, oh, yeah, that's definitely him.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like Fred's a good guy.
Okay, you met him?
Oh, yeah, I had a lot of really good experience with him, and as we got older, you know, he had a show on our lot after the Wonder Years. We used to play basketball together.
Huh.
Okay, do you remember when you first met John Goodman?
I do. The first day I met John was the first day that I actually started, and we were supposed to do a table read, and John was a mountain of a man, especially when you're a little kid. And he was real quiet. He's kind of a reserved, quiet guy, unless you really know him. And he's kind of shy. And then he gets on stage and he can do anything and make everybody laugh. So I just remember he was a mountain of a man, and he didn't have any kids, and we didn't really know how to address each other. So our relationship really grew as the show went on.
I noticed watching the first season that they both have really good interactions. Like, you would believe that you were their kid.
You know, I was really lucky. Going to work every day was like the greatest. It was just perfect. I had people who really accepted me and took an interest in me, both on camera and off. And so I think I endeared myself to them through all the little goofy things I did, and they were very open and accepting of me.
Yeah, you know, I want to mention this right now before I forgive you, but I love John Goodman. Like, he is like a first draft pick Hall of Famer for the Victator Hall of Fame.
Oh, I love him. I love him. I think he may be one of the most underrated actors around. Him and Laurie Metcalf, I would tell you, are two of the most underrated people in this business. If that's possible, as much as John has done, as good as he's been and as much as people know, he's even better.
How did you get along initially with Sarah Gilbert and Lacey Garrison? Is that her name?
Goranson. Lacey Goranson.
Okay, that's it. Okay, I'm sorry.
No problem. You know, the two of them were the same age. Lacey was a little bit older, but they were basically the same age. So they were really tight. And when I first started there, you know, you know, a little boy, girls who are, you know, 5, 6 years older, they're into totally different things. But Lacey and Sarah and I kind of always just really connected well. Sarah Gilbert and I had a pretty special relationship. She would put up with me following her around. She had all the cool friends, you know. She was wearing Doc Martens and wearing leather jackets before they were cool. And, you know, all of her little pack of friends that everybody made fun of as these, you know, these little, you know, trendy kids, every one of them turned into a major star, which is so ironic now.
One thing I noticed is I was going through an episode guide earlier just to kind of get a refresher on it. I noticed they didn't really give you a centric episode till season 3.
Yeah, I think part of that was, you know, you had the older girls, so it was easier to use the older characters. I think it's really hard as a writer to write for a young child. You know, I was pretty young early on, and I think the show initially was more geared towards the two parents, and it became more complete family as Roseanne had a bigger say in it.
Right. You know, one episode I liked from early on, and, you know, now that I have little kids myself, well, they're not mine, but they might as well be. There was this episode when Darlene was trying to build a castle and DJ crushed it by accident.
Yes.
And I remember that because that seemed like such a genuine thing, because I've watched my little nephew and his brother, and I've seen that exact same thing play out. It's not a castle,
yes,
it might be a video game.
Yeah, we had some of the best writers, and a lot of them had kids, and they really brought, I think, authentic things to the show that I don't think I've really seen in a lot of other shows. I mean, really genuine interactions between siblings and family members.
You know, one thing I always liked on the show was the kids were not needlessly smart asses. Like, they weren't always at each other's throats with the parents, like on a lot of sitcoms.
Yeah.
You know, and the people don't recruit a lot, because, you know, nobody actually hates their parents. Like, you see your mom in the morning, you always say, hey, go to hell, or make some smart-ass remark, you just say, good morning.
Right. It was all geared towards a real event, if that makes any sense. Like, I agree with you, because, you know, Darlene was such a sassy character, and Lisey could be a smart-ass at times, but, you know, it was always geared towards something that was going on, or there was an event, but at the heart of it, like a real family, it wasn't something that was a character that, you know, we overdid every moment of every episode.
There was an episode that was kind of like that when we rewatched it. This is an episode I really vividly remember as a kid, but watched the new eyes. It was the episode when it was your birthday and you got the Super Nintendo. Now, when I was a kid, I just saw it on the aspect that, you know, you were so happy just to play that you were basically scoffing the whole, you know, birthday and everything just to play, kind of like what I did.
Right.
But I saw the new episode, the fact that, you know, yeah, your parents were basically saving up to get the Super Nintendo. Then, you know, the grandmother just kind of swoops in and gets it anyway, just kind of undermines their authority without asking.
And I think anybody with kids, I have kids, and I think that stuff happens to you, you know. You save up, or you tell your kid they have to wait for something, or, you know, you decide, okay, I'm ready, I'm going to buy the great gift this year, and then somebody else shows up with it, or, you know, and then you're kind of left standing there going, what just happened here?
Yeah, it's one of those things, you know, whenever I buy one of my nephews a gift, I always run it by their parents, so I'm going to get it. You know, we always run each other's playbook before the holidays.
See, that's smart. You know, I have not been so lucky. I've had supportive family members jump over my gifts a few times, and, you know, you just go, no, wait a minute. You don't understand.
It's kind of an odd position, because on one hand, somebody bought your kid a nice gift, but on the other hand, you feel like your glory was stolen a little bit, and then you feel bad for it.
Yeah, it's a weird moment. I think for me, I always try to keep in mind, obviously my kid has mentioned that they really wanted this, so, you know, everybody thought they were doing the best thing possible, and so usually I just end up getting something else. But, you know, it is that glory moment where you're like, yeah, somebody hit a home run right here, and you're like, oh, somebody else hit the home run. I'll stay in the on-deck circle.
Okay, going back to season 3, I think the first episode you were given a B plot was the one when Dan loaned Arnie that money, and you were peeping on Becky.
Yes.
Okay.
That was your beginning of DJ DJ doing things that definitely got a lot of attention.
I was trying to remember, because now I'm trying to remember which episode it was where Becky and Darlene were cleaning DJ's room and they found a shoebox full of Barbie heads and legs.
You know what? That was kind of a running gag. It started out in one episode and kind of bled into a second one, and I was so happy Roseanne kind of turned to the writers and said, okay, let's not go too far with this, because I started getting, to this day, I still get random doll parts in the mail. I no joke.
I always liked Roseanne. I always liked the response when the girls come to them and they're like saying, you know, DJ's a boy. He doesn't do things like you. Then they show him the box a lot, and they tell Dan, he's like, oh, he's not playing with dolls, is he? Then he's relieved when he sees it's just severed parts.
Yes. You know, I really think that we had some of the best writers. I mean, and a lot of those people have gone on to do so many other great shows. We had such a good group, and they were so willing to be honest, and I think the honesty is the thing that people remember.
Dude, do you remember interacting with Joss Whedon much?
You know what, he wasn't there very long. He was there in the beginning, and we had a lot of really strong writers in the beginning who really branched out pretty early. So I didn't have I remember him. He probably doesn't remember anything about me other than that I was that young kid. I'd love to work with him.
Yeah, but you ought to try to snag a part in Avengers 2.
Oh, man. From the mouth of everybody here.
Now, when you said about the writers doing things more real or pushing things, I can't remember, were there any controversies with some of these earlier episodes?
There were a lot of controversies, especially with, like, one of the first episodes that was really a big deal was the episode where the girls get their period. And that was a really massive fight. And, you know, the things you couldn't say, you know, we had to censor there, and, you know, you can't say time of the month, you can't say Aunt Flo, you can't say period, you can't say, you know, menstrual cycle, you can't say, and you're like, well, what are we going to say? And finally,
well, I remember that happened with the I Love Lucy, where they couldn't even use the word pregnant when they were having the baby episodes. Now,
yeah.
was that around the same time as the Married with Children period episode?
No, I actually think it was.
It was a similar time. We were first, and she had to fight tooth and nail for that, and they actually said that they weren't going to air the episode after we did it. And it turned out to be pretty successful.
And, well, you know, the funny thing was, you know, and I mean, not steering away for anything, you know, it's like, because me and Neil just love Married Children, too. But anyway, they had the episode, and the weird thing about the Fox censors were they fought to finally get the episode through, but the thing they objected to was calling the episode a period piece.
Right.
And that was the thing they
objected.
Yeah, and they didn't understand why, because nobody's going to see the title, because this is before DVRs and everything.
Right. I know. I'm telling you, some of the things that you see people fight over, especially, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, the things that we fought over compared to things that people say now just routinely every night at 8 o'clock. I mean, I remember all the words that we got to add to our repertoire when we moved from, like, 8 to 8:30. That was a huge deal. You know, it's like, oh, we can be a little riskier now.
Do you think some of that was the censors trying to do a power struggle?
I think, you know, there's some elements of that, but I think the censors, for the most part, we had a great censor. His name was Neil, and he worked there all those years. I think they just have a list, and they just have a certain amount of things that, you know, they know that their group gives them that they know they're going to be uncomfortable with, and they just try to kind of toe that line as hard as they can. And on some level, I think they give in to certain things knowing that they're going to give up something, but there's certain things they just can't budge on.
You know, this is going a little bit later in the show, but later on they did a couple episodes with DJ, like where he was getting erections in school.
Yes.
And then they did the episode where he was masturbating. And was that difficult for you? Was it ever a point when you were almost going to veto?
You know, it's funny. All of those episodes before they even finished writing the episodes, Roseanne would call and say, hey, we're thinking about doing an episode about this. How would you feel? Would you be uncomfortable? Would you be embarrassed? And so my thing about it was like the masturbation episode. She goes, well, you won't have to say it. We won't make you have to say it, but we're going to have this episode. Are you okay with that? Would you be okay as long as I don't make you really talk about it too much? And I said, oh, yeah, as long as it's funny. You know, when you do a good comedy, hey, if there's a good joke at the end, there's a lot of things you do. You know, the erection show where they talk about putting a book in front of it and all this stuff, you know, those are great lines. You know, the masturbation show, I think, turned out to be one of the best episodes we ever did. I mean, there's some classic lines in there, you know. I heard you got caught playing with your instrument in band. Not in band, speakers, you know what I mean?
So this one was like, well, you've been in there for, the best one was, well, you've been in there for an hour, so he's either really good at it or really bad at it.
Yeah, when Darlene turns to John and goes, oh, he's been in there for a couple hours, and, you know, he's either really, really good at it or he's really, really bad at it.
Well, the funny thing is, it's a big episode for you, and you're not in it as much, considering. But, like, most of the talk is when you're off screen.
Yeah, and I think that was done kind of to be polite to me. And I think, you know, the funny part is I went to regular school on the days and weeks we weren't filming, and it would never fail. You know, that episode was supposed to be on a week where I was going to be at school very little. And somehow the schedule would get changed, and it would be on the week that I was at school the whole week, every single day. And so, you know, Tuesday night, all of a sudden you're like, okay, this is going to be, you know, the episode where Darlene has this thing with David, and then you turn on, and you're like, oh, my God, it's the masturbation episode. I got to go back to school tomorrow.
How would you handle it? Would you kind of just go to school and own it, or would you just kind of hope that nobody else mentioned it and you wouldn't?
Oh, man. Our show was so big, you couldn't hide from it. You had to just show up and own it and just kind of like, you know, yes, I did that episode. It was funny, right? Yes, it was funny. Okay, well, then good. So, if you do good work, I think you can take pride in it, even if you're the butt of a lot of the jokes.
If you, you mentioned you were going to a regular high school. How were you treated? Were you treated like a big deal, or were you just kind of, or was it like a big at first? You were just treated like another kid.
You know, elementary school.
Lines too.
What was that?
Were you razzed a bit, or just like, would they have quit like the lines back with you as well? Just to
it's
add to that.
Elementary school. I started school before the show, so a lot of the people just knew me as Michael. So all the way through elementary school, I was just me, and it was a day job. Then in middle school, I actually switched school districts, and then it was kind of more of a big deal because people only knew me from the show going into that. And high school, you can imagine, you know, the first year of high school was a mix. You know, you had people who loved the show and people who were very supportive, and you had people who loved to try and talk smack to you because, you know, high school is high school. And then I had people who would, like, try to bully me because they thought that, you know, that would be a cool thing to be able to tell somebody. I think you learn to hold your ground.
I think it's one of these things that, you know, I think I mentioned this on Twitter, but it's like a, you know, I think the perfect counter is, it's like, well, why don't we talk about your hit show? Oh, I'm sorry.
See, I in some ways you always would love to say stuff like that, but I was always somewhat, I never wanted to be boastful or ego-filled in my comeback. So normally it was either direct, or it was more kind of a thing where a lot of people I could just blow off. Unless it escalated, in which case you just defend yourself and move on. It's not that big a deal. It comes with the territory. You know, she was a very public and powerful individual and at times polarizing for people. Some people loved her and some people really didn't.
You know, to go back to that episode one more time, I was just going to say is that is one of those things that when I watched it, and you'll see me watch TV, that I started laughing so hard that I almost passed out. When you said the part, it's like, who told you I was in band?
Right.
And I swear to God, I almost, like, I couldn't breathe.
There's a scene where John and I are in the garage, and we're talking about it, but not talking about it. And he goes, you know, it's okay, everybody does it. And I have to turn to him and say, oh, okay, well, then how much do you do it? It's like, and he has to turn around and say, well, it's one of those things where nobody talks about it, but everybody does it, okay? And, you know, that's one of those things where, you know, those are some really good scenes. And when you read it, you're going, oh, this is going to kill. I mean, it's every comedian's dream to have a line like that where you know, I'm not in band, stupid. You know that's going to be a home run.
I mean, yeah, because it killed me. And, you know, it's funny, talking about that scene with Dan in the garage, I ended up once having a conversation with my father almost exactly like that. And, you know, mind you, my father was a man of the world, but he's like this, hey, boy, you know that's not wrong, right? And I was like, yes, I know. And then we both quickly left the room trying to hide our mutual shame.
Well, that's the thing. I think those are the conversations that happen in real life that you don't want to have, but you have to. So, you know, you get to that point where you just, okay, we're going to have to talk about this. Now, how do I talk about this without getting too into it? And then it's, okay, we're good. We can move on.
Going to another episode, do you remember the episode when DJ sold the car?
Absolutely.
Because, you know, there's this part where they... Oh, you can finish.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I assume you're talking about what I was compared to.
Yeah, when they was like this, look for, you know, and, would that bother you any, or do you think it was funny yourself?
Oh, I thought that, you know, it was funny because over the years they kind of teased me about the Eddie Munster thing. I had, you know, really dark hair, thick dark hair, and, you know, a widow's peak and all this stuff, so... You know, I was kind of pale, so it was funny. It was kind of a running joke with us anyway, so it found its way into the show. It was pretty funny. But it was a great it's a great moment of TV when they go, you know, what was the description of the guy? Looks like this, looks like this, kind of looks like Eddie Munster, and everybody turns and looks at me.
Yeah, I remember that because they did this thing in the credits where they were filming it like it was Cops, and, you know, and Roseanne yelling like, DJ, it's the Cops! And you jump off the roof.
Yeah.
And you did an episode of Seinfeld, right?
Yeah.
How was that compared to working on Roseanne?
You know, just a different style. Again, great show. Everybody was, you know, professional, ready to roll, ready to do their part. So, but we had something special. I think we were more fun loving. We were more joking behind the scenes. They were a little more formal than we were. But again, I was only there for a short period of time.
Right, because it was because we just found that on we were just looking around on Wikipedia and IMDb. It says you did an episode of Hey Arnold. Is that true?
Yeah, I did. I did a few voiceovers for them.
Okay, how was voice acting compared to? And it also said you did Little Rosie, because I remember that cartoon very well. Do you remember how was that experience compared to acting on camera?
It's a dream job, but it can be hard at times. I mean, that's one of those jobs. You could show up in your pajamas and do that job. It's like that's a dream job. You know, you go to a little studio and, you know, you have your lines and you look at them and you go right into a mic. And it's a lot of fun, but there's a pressure there because there's nothing physical you can do with your lines. You know, you can't sell a look or sell anything else. So you really have to, the inflection becomes really important. And, you know, I think the director becomes really important because they can kind of guide you and steer you towards what they want or what maybe somebody else did that you can react to, because a lot of times you're not with the other actor.
Is it hard to go to...
Well, I know it's kind of true with some actors, because I know some of them will can't really transition when they try to do a voice on anything. Like, it would be very wooden or just kind of flat or just have no direction whatsoever.
Yeah, it's hard at times because, especially if you don't know the people you're working with, or you don't get to hear them all the time, you know, or sometimes you read with somebody else. If you're reading with somebody and they're real flat, and then it becomes, you know, it's a real stress on you from one standpoint. But that's what you train for. That's, you know, it's like anything. Some days are easier than others, and I love it. I would do more voiceover work if I could.
Okay, going back to about season 3, that was when Chuck Lorre was writing for the show. Do you remember interacting with him any?
I love Chuck. I still think his writing is fantastic. Chuck was one of those guys. He was such a – you could just tell. Certain guys come through and you just know they're going someplace.
One thing I noticed is when he was writing, because I could usually tell the episodes he was writing, because I noticed there would be a lot more blatant fat jokes.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things, you know, Michael, we're about to hit streaming in a minute. That means the live portion is going to be over and it's going to be recording. I was just going to give you a heads up.
No problem.
Okay, but what I always liked about the show personally, because, you know, ever since I was a little kid, you know, I've been fat. You know, or it's like I can't remember a time. And one thing I always like, because I'll be the type of person watching, like, the Goonies, and this kid will be saying, there's ice cream in here, and I'll say, oh, stop it, you're making us all look bad.
Yeah, I love it.
You know,
I
but
think
Roseanne
started that.
Right, but they were actually, you know, like, full-fledged people.
Yes, and I, you know, the thing about it is, Roseanne, having such a good sense of humor, she loves fat jokes. She loves, you know, a good joke is a good joke, and if you can tease somebody, people tease each other. That's one of the ways that you kind of disarm each other or disarm things that you're insecure about, too.
It's never done in a mean fashion.
No, it was never done in a malicious, negative connotation. It was more of a playful or a teasing, you know. It was done kind of like a family out of love.
Yeah, that's what I meant by it. It's just that was one of the funny things I noticed, because I enjoyed the Chuck Lorre episode. Like, he wrote this episode when Dan was talking about a woman. Okay, hold on 1 second, because we're going to streaming in 5 seconds. nervous. I took some medicine because I was so nervous.
I know which episode he's talking about, though.
Yeah, there was this episode when Dan was dreaming about another woman, and it worried Roseanne until she met her, and it was this heavyset woman.
Yep.
And Roseanne saw her, she said, "Oh my God, she's cute!" And then she went over and talked to her, and the woman's very hateful, and she said, "And she's got a personality!"
Yes.
And that was one of those things that just cracked me up.
I think that we were very good about that.
Yeah, it was like excellent timing on the show.
Well, I think we had everybody seemed to have a good chemistry together.
Let me ask you about the final season, because, you know, that's kind of the infamous weird season. What did you think of it at the time?
You know, at the time, I guess having the insight of being there made it a little different. You know, we had made plans as a show to do certain episodes, and the word kind of came down budget-wise that we weren't going to be able to do some of these things. You know, Roseanne wanted to take the crew on a trip kind of as a thank you, and it just didn't work out. And so some of the episodes, we kind of brought the outside world to us. And then we also, John kind of had an open contract, and he was doing so many films. A lot of times we didn't know which days and weeks we were going to have him. And there were days where he'd show up to visit us, you know, just to come by and say hi and see how everybody was doing. And the writers would crank out four or five scenes to put in two or three shows in an hour while he was hanging out. And then we would tape something with him and then try to fit those into episodes. So that makes it hard to kind of run a normal continuity. But also there were some really... Somebody had their finger on the pulse of something because, like, you know, we take the train ride and there's the Rosambo episode. And
yeah,
it's like the Taliban is the group. Like, the group of terrorists is an actual name that comes up, you know, 10 years later that nobody knew of.
The thing I remembered about that train episode was at the end of it when Mark beat up one of the terrorists, and I was losing my shit like I was watching a wrestling match.
It was awesome.
There was one episode in particular with you and John Goodman doing a scene where he's thinking about going back to California, and that's honestly one of my favorite scenes with DJ. Do you know the one I'm talking about?
Yeah, it was. You know, it's funny because that's kind of like. It was more of a serious scene than anything else. It's really kind of an awkward, you know, dad, are you staying, dad, are you going kind of moment. And, you know, we found ways to really have some really serious moments in the midst of our comedy.
Yeah, that was actually one of the episodes I was waiting for. Let me get back to something right here because I felt like I cut you off. Do you remember when you first met Glenn Quinn?
Oh, yes. Glenn was one of those guys who, when he walked in, everybody knew he was there in the best of ways. I mean, he's that guy, you know, he's that, like, in a dark night, he's the shining star that everybody sees, you know, and kind of brightens things up. He was just that kind of person.
Was he supposed to be a regular from the start, or was he just so good that he got promoted?
I think initially they were looking for a boyfriend for Becky, and the conflict was good, and they started out, I think he was going to be like a possible recurring, but they really hadn't fully stretched it out, and then he was just so amazing, and he and Lisi were so good together that you almost couldn't be without him. Kind of the same thing when Donnie Gillespie came in as his little brother. You know, Johnny was just so good. Initially it was just supposed to be this weird, you know, little brother issue, and then it turned out to be David's got to stay because this is such a substantial actor.
I noticed that later on they would put David and DJ in a lot of scenes together, like up so when David, DJ beat David up, and DJ said something, "Now I see why people beat me up, this is great."
Yes. I think the worst one, because I know Johnny got a hard time for it, is the episode DJ calls him Poodle Healy.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's a tough thing that can stick.
Yeah, I mean, I had taken enough of those over the years that I knew when that line came out, I was like, oh, this one's going to follow you a little bit.
I remember that, yeah, because I remember there was a later episode where they said that, where David was telling Jackie, said, no, I would always want Darlene to be honest, even if she said your hair made you look like a poodle.
Yes.
And he's like, yes.
That was his version of the Eddie Munster thing. It just kind of followed him.
Now, going back on the serious moments, you saying about the open contract about John Goodman, was that part of the reason why they had the whole heart attack in second season finale?
Yeah, well, at the end of season 8, we didn't know if we were coming back. And that was a really hard time in general because we ended that year and everybody's contract was over. And so we didn't know if the show was going to get picked up, if they were going to work it out, if what it wasn't really people holding out for money. It was more how far does everybody want to go. And, you know, when you do a show for that long, you know, people start moving on and people start looking for other things. And a lot of times people don't want to get typecast and, you know, management and those people start talking in people's ears and it becomes something where the show can't go forever. I mean, the end of that 8th season was devastating for me because I went home assuming we were going to do a 9th season, and I spent the whole summer worrying that we weren't going to come back and that I hadn't really told all these people how substantial they were in my life.
Yeah, I can remember. I remember when I watched that episode. It's like you're watching it, and I knew what was going to happen, but I kept hoping it was going to change somehow.
Yeah, you kind of got the feeling that this was going that way, and they did a good job of kind of foreshadowing it, and it was like you just didn't want it to happen, and that's kind of how it felt on set. Like, you knew that we didn't know what the future was, and we didn't like the way that this was going.
Actually, that episode is still rough to watch. Like, the last time we watched it, it's like, oh, that's terrible.
When Neil told me what the episode was going to be, he tried to sneak out of the room, and I held him down.
It's like, I'm not watching Dan die again.
Yes, and that's the thing. You know, that's one of those episodes, it's still uncomfortable to watch. But again, I credit that to, it must have been written well, otherwise it wouldn't have that impact.
Right.
I hope John Goodman
exactly.
Pulled it, too.
Yeah,
it was like, it really, it wouldn't have worked, you know, if you didn't have so much invested in the characters.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, did you know what the series finale was going to be, that season 3 till the end was just going to be a story?
Nobody knew, as far as, we had a different ending, but we never really knew what the other ending was, and it got sold. Somebody in the production office sold it. And so Roseanne rewrote the ending to what it is now. And literally when they taped that, they kicked everybody out. There were 3 people on stage, Roseanne, a director, and I think 1 person to kind of operate some of the equipment. And literally they locked off the cameras. They kicked all the crew out. They kicked all the actors out. The final show I had to watch to find out how it ended, which was a very awkward moment. It's the first time I ever had to watch to know what was going to happen on our show.
How did you feel about the ending when you first saw it?
You know, it tied up loose ends but raised new questions. You know, I think, you know, the storyline of, like, which daughter was with which boy and all that stuff was hard because I was so invested in kind of the way the show was. But I thought they did a good job of tying a lot of stuff together and kind of explaining some of it.
Did you
follow any of the critics at the time just to hear what people were thinking about the seasons or the episodes?
You know, it's one of those things I've learned over the years, you're not going to please everybody. And, you know, I know that there's a lot of shows in season 9 that people don't like. But again, if you don't ever take any chances, especially in comedy, if you don't take chances, then if you're not touching that line or pushing the line, you're really not doing anything.
You know, I can say, watching the episodes, you know, I can't say that they're my favorite episodes, but I can appreciate the risk that was taken.
Well, I think that's it. And then I also think, you know, if you look back, they're not unwatchable, you know, and some people acted like it was, you know, a crime, you know, that we changed so much. But, you know, over the course of 9 years, things change. Writers come in and out. You know, you got to take some chances.
I think
season nine, the one that had all the breaking the fourth wall jokes, I'm trying to remember.
There were some, yeah.
Let me go back to something like a couple of years before. Do you remember when you first met Tom Arnold?
You know, vaguely, because he came in and came out. He did Warm Up, which is like the guy who does almost stand-up comedy in front of the audience. So he kind of came in, came out, then he was hired to play Arnie. And I remember when he joined the show as Arnie.
Let me ask, because, you know, I don't want to stir anything up, but, you know, I'm just curious about this. The stories at the time were that there was a lot of fighting on set between Roseanne and Tom Arnold. Did you ever see any of that?
I don't think it's any secret that they had a very public, passionate, and heated relationship in every sense of the word. You know, I think both good and bad. And I think they had a lot of times where they were really happy with each other, and then they had times where they weren't happy with each other. And I will say this, you know, having just done the roast, you know, over the years, I've been close to Roseanne for 24 years, so she's been a constant figure in my life. So when things went bad, you know, it's kind of like when your parents split up in that sense, because, you know, for me, I was obviously closer to Roseanne. And I have to say, you know, Tom came to the roast and did such a phenomenal job. You know, I really respect what he did and was really impressed by how he went about what he did and the way he presented himself. I was really impressed with that.
Yeah, I heard about that. I haven't actually watched the roast. I've thought about watching it, but I tend to avoid those Comedy Central roasts in general just because they always come across as a little mean. Or a little too
yeah.
mean, but okay, no, you go on. I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
But yeah, that's all I was going to say, you know, but I kind of wanted to see this one, especially when I heard, you know, about Tom Arnold being there, because Roseanne seemed like she was very adamant about Tom Arnold, because I remember on Twitter, she really blew up about somebody retweeting something Tom Arnold said to her.
Right.
So well, I was really surprised by that.
Yeah, let me put it to you this way. At 7:25, just before the show started to tape, he was not going to be there. And so when he came out, I was probably one of the most stunned people in the building. And then he came out and he did a great job. And I have to say, you know, he turned to her and he talked about her going on the Tonight Show and how that was a seminal moment in her life. And he said that she was his Tonight Show. And that's a pretty big compliment. Even with all the stuff that's happened over the years, you know, you have to give somebody credit when they step up and give somebody else credit like that and say something that kind in a public sense, especially after they've kind of been estranged for a while. You know, it was something that earned some respect.
Yeah, it really surprised me because I remember one time when she was on Howard Stern and they called Tom Arnold, and, I mean, it was like, uncomfortable to watch. So, I mean,
yes.
When I heard that, it was, like, really surprising. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
Yes, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes. You know, part of my job was I did the most interviews of everybody on the show. I did a lot of the PR and stuff. So, you know, you end up doing a lot of these things, and you, I was played those clips over and over and over again.
Getting to another part you did that wasn't on Roseanne, you did an episode of Walker, Texas Ranger. Did you get to talk to Chuck Norris much?
You know, the funny part about that is, you know, people can tease me all they want about that episode. I got to have a fight with Chuck Norris. I got to do a knife fight with Chuck Norris. On the list of things, you know, I can check that off my bucket list. I can say I had that moment.
Yeah, that's badass.
It was pretty amazing. You know,
yeah, you're like a step removed. You're like a step removed from